This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest Mohammed Mehedi has given himself the mission of trying to explain the Islamic world to the West and the West to the Islamic world. He's the Secretary General of the National Council on Islamic Affairs in New York and the President of the American Arab Relations Committee. Mehedi is a hybrid of two cultures. He grew up in Baghdad, but has lived in the U.S. for more than 40 years and is an expert in American constitutional law. He's the author of several books, including Constitutionalism, Western and Middle Eastern, A Peace in the Middle East, and Islam and Intolerance, a reply to Salman Rushdie. I spoke with Mehedi earlier today and asked him if this war was a terrible setback to his goal of explaining the Islamic world to the West.
Well, it is an ugly development, not only for Islam, but for the human cause, for the cause of peace, for the American people. I have stated that we are caught between a madman in Baghdad, Iraq, and a madman in Washington, D.C. And regretfully, our own madman in Washington is a greater danger to America's economy, social fabric, its international standing, to civility, than Saddam Hussein could ever be a threat to America. And it really breaks my heart that this height of modern Western civilization is engaged in destroying the cradle of human civilization, Baghdad, which is my hometown. Baghdad, the city of chemistry, physics, agronomy, modern science, today being destroyed by the most advanced civilization. The future historians, when they write, the barbarians of the 20th century destroyed the cradle of a human civilization.
What position has your group taken on the war?
Well, we have denounced Saddam. Saddam, I have opposed him for the last 10, 15 years for a number of reasons. We have felt that his oppression at home was a violation of our hopes for the democratization process in Iraq. His war against Iran was condemned. His invasion of Kuwait was condemned, and we believe that he should get out of Kuwait. But what President Bush has been doing is more damaging America's future in the Arab world, in the Muslim world, in the Third World. And even though the news media have so far not reported the reaction of the Third World against American action, we will hear more about attacks on American embassies, American business establishments, American civilians traveling, because the Americans really do not understand the unbelievable thing that Bush is doing.
You know Saddam Hussein personally. How did you get to know him?
Oh, whenever I go to the Middle East, I meet with all the Arab kings, presidents, because while in this country, we try to interpret the Arab and Muslim thinking to the American people, when we visit the Middle East, we try to interpret the American institutions to the Arab and Muslim rulers, kings, news media. We hope that we are a link. And in that capacity, when I went to the Middle East several times, I met with Saddam, as I have met with Yasser Arafat, Gaddafi, King Fahd, King Hussein. And these guys are really not that important, not that big. What makes them important is American foreign policy. When President Reagan was picking on Gaddafi, the head of a 3 million country, then Gaddafi developed an international stature. Not that Gaddafi was so big, but Reagan made him big. Today, America's attack on Saddam is making Saddam the greatest hero throughout the Arab and Muslim world, not because Saddam has become a nice guy, but because he is standing tall against what is conceived in the Arab and Muslim and Third World as a continuation of Western colonial aggression. And of course, Saddam stands tall because he is opposed to Western colonialism coming into the area again in the name of what Bush says, New World Order. But the New World Order is understood by the third world people as a new form of Western colonialism.
Mohammed Mehdi is my guest. He's the Secretary General of the National Council on Islamic Affairs in New York and President of the American Arab Relations Committee. Now, I want to ask you a few things about yourself. I know you have your doctorate from the University of California at Berkeley in political science, specializing in American constitutional law. That's very interesting to me because I think one of the fundamental differences between Islam and Judeo-Christian culture is that in Islam there's no separation between, you know, church and state, between the religious and the secular. So tell me how you came to study constitutional law.
Terry, because I was a fortunate man. I was born in Baghdad and reborn in Berkeley. I consider my education at the University of California as a rebirth. So I was born in Baghdad, reborn in Berkeley. When you say that the difference, the basic difference between Islam and the Judeo-Christian tradition, which Judeo-Christian tradition of prior to the Reformation Wars or after Reformation War? Because this separation between religion and the state in the West evolved after some 200 years of revolution and the Wars of Reformation, in which hundreds of thousands of Catholics were killed by hundreds of thousands of Protestants, and the Catholics reciprocated in killing Protestants, and all of them killed and gassed Jews. So the separation did not come about, was not part of the original Christianity, original Judaism. It evolved as a result of painful 200 years of war. Happily or unhappily, Islam has not had its reformation. That is why there is a greater link between religion and state in the Muslim lands than in the West. And in my opinion, as a student of these affairs, the Muslim world will have its reformation, but peacefully, without these hundreds of thousands getting killed on religious grounds, as took place in Europe.
You've written that tolerance is the hallmark of Islam. But for many of us in the West, when we look at Islam, we see in some countries a lack of tolerance for pluralism.
You are so an astute an observer, Terry. Islam is one thing, what the Muslims do, maybe something else. Like Christianity, the Prince of Peace, thou shalt not kill. Now, that is one thing, and the Christian Americans who dropped the A-bomb over Hiroshima, and in Vietnam, the Christian Americans killed more than 2.5 million poor people of that wretched land. These are not doing it in their Christian capacity as Christians. They are doing it in their political capacity. And so Islam is a religion of tolerance because, and by tolerance, it means appreciation of differences. You are a Jew, fine with me. You are a Christian, fine with me. You are a Presbyterian, a Buddhist, fine with me, because we are all to be judged by God. Now, some Muslims, for political reasons, have become sexists, have become intolerant and against pluralism. It is the political circumstances, deviation from the spirit of Islam, and I'm sure if the Prophet was here, would condemn all these Muslims, just as if the Prince of Peace was here, he would condemn George Bush for his barbarian killing of the civilian people in Iraq.
You said that you were born in Baghdad and reborn in Berkeley. How did you feel that you were reborn in Berkeley?
Terry, I flew to Berkeley in 1949 as a 16th, 17th century person. I believe, for example, that God has created the government and the king represented government, very much similar to the thinking in Western Europe in 16th, 17th century, the divine theory of the kings, that the king Charles James represented God on earth. I came out to America with that mentality. At Berkeley, they told me, no, the government is the instrument of the will of the people, not established by God, but by the people. And I had to go through a painful experience, gradually chipping my beliefs, throwing them out under the rigorous logic and its impact. Gradually and painfully, I had to give up much of my dogmatic beliefs, simplistic moralist standards, to become part of the 20th century. So I say I spent in Berkeley some 300-400 years. Within 3-4 years, what a fortunate man.
Mohammed Mehdi is my guest. He's the Secretary General of the National Council on Islamic Affairs in New York and President of the American Arab Relations Committee. When you came to America, it was the late 1940s, you studied at Berkeley, and then you decided to stay in America, I suppose.
Yes, I came as a student on a scholarship by the government of Iraq to study, out of all things, they wanted me to study accounting, debit, credit, balance sheet, the boring thing that I just couldn't stand. So I gave it up. I changed into political science. At Berkeley, we had some of the great, brilliant scholars in the political science department. And I was gradually involved and became in love with the beloved First Amendment, that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. This captured my imagination, and the stress that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech, not abridging the freedom of speech of the citizens, but it shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech of the human beings under the American jurisdiction. Wow, what a great difference between this open society and the closed societies of the Middle East, Asia, and Africa with which I had my experiences.
Is that why you decided to stay?
Well, this love affair, then it also developed a personal love affair. I fell in love. I had children, then gradually my children, 3 beautiful daughters, who gradually became part of the American soil. They knew more about the Supremes and the monkeys and what more than I knew about Beethoven and Bach. So I felt gradually that if I go back, I really will be uprooting these people.
What kind of Islamic culture did you find in the States when you decided to stay here?
A very limited one. In those days, in 1949s, 50s, there were 3 mosques in the country, in Sacramento, California, one in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, which was the first mosque built in this country, and one in Washington, D.C. By now, those 3 have become more than 1,500, and Islam is the second largest religion in the country. Some 9 to 10 million American Muslims. Great change in this country. And of course, the people who come here bring with them from the old country the feelings and the traditions, and gradually they will be exposed, as I was fortunately, to the thrills of the open society. And that is why I think that American Muslims are the most fortunate Muslims in the world, because here we have the freedom to think, to reevaluate, to reinterpret, and thereby, when American Muslims, we put our acts together, we can educate the Muslim in the old country and bring them back from their 18th, 19th century to the 21st century. We are a fortunate people.
My guest is Mohammed Mehdi, Secretary General of the National Council on Islamic Affairs in New York. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Mohammed Mehdi is my guest. He's the Secretary General of the National Council on Islamic Affairs in New York and President of the American Arab Relations Committee. What was your participation in trying to bring together Muslims from different parts of the world who had emigrated to the United States and to, you know, to form some kind of network or connection?
It really was a painful one, a lonely experience. We were 2-3 here at Berkeley. Occasionally there are 2-3 in Davis, California, which is the other UC campus there. And we meet on the occasions, we pray together, we engage in the festivities, celebrating Eid al-Adha or Eid al-Fitr. These are Islamic holidays. But it was a minute, and somehow we were trying to protect ourselves, defend ourselves, hide ourselves, fearful that the general... we may be ridiculed by the majority of the people. Now, in contrast to the earlier days, those painful, slow, frightening days, we are more part of the Americana, doing our two bits as any other people. When President Bush last week called upon the religious groups to pray, we also joined in praying for our armed forces in the Gulf, praying to God to bring them all back immediately, fast, without killing any further or getting killed.
Is the war directly affecting the way you think you are being perceived as an Arab American or your friends or family? I'm wondering, like, directly in your life, if you felt any sense of discrimination.
Not much, even though in our offices we have been receiving some 25% telephone calls, which are nasty, obnoxious, threatening. And I walked the other day, I was on 3rd Avenue and 45th Street. A man calls me, "Dr. Mehdi, Dr. Mehdi." I look back. He had seen me on television the night before, and he gives me the peace sign, supporting our position. Then a few minutes later, a man calls, "Mehdi, Mehdi." I look back, and he gives me half of the peace sign. So we get to this is a part of the ups and downs of life. But I must say that all the bad things that we receive now compared with 10 or 20 years ago, 10 years ago, out of 100 calls, 90% of them were threatening. Now it is only 20% of them are threatening. It is a tribute to the open society and to the news media, which has educated the people.
Do you have family still in Baghdad?
Terry, I have families in Iraq. I have friends in Iraq. And when these bombs, today there were 400 aerial assaults upon Baghdad, dropping thousands of tons of bombs. It shatters me. It has made me feel, and I have expressed it on another network, like seeing my brother with his powerful muscles killing my mother. It is a painful experience, and for no good reason. If President Bush had waited 6 more months, I know the Saddam regime would have peacefully collapsed under the impact of the embargo and the sanctions. But Bush, being impatient, is afraid that he may be called a wimp. So he engages in this act, which is really, on the long run, more damaging to America. And it is easy for you to get into a hole. It is difficult to get out. U.S. went into Korea some 40 years ago. Still, U.S. is there in Japan. Still, U.S. is there in Europe. By the time the U.S. may get out of the Middle East and Asia and the Third World, maybe 40, 50 years from now.
Do you have any inside information on what life is like in Iraq now?
What we have received is that it is frightening. People are terrorized. And when the Americans talk about terrorism, that some guy shoots at somebody and that is an act of terrorism, it bothers me, because what America is engaged today is terrorizing a whole people. Yes, people are frightened. Every second they hear these huge bombers coming across their skies. They don't have food. They don't have water. This morning I received the information that in certain areas, people go to borrow from each other a cup of water, a glass of water. Food they don't have. Even water, they have to borrow it from each other. A miserable life, because George Bush has personalized this war against Saddam Hussein, and hundreds of thousands of people have to pay for it.
You've given us a sense of the kind of message you'd like to send to George Bush. Is there a message you wish you could send, or that you, in fact, have sent to heads of state in the Middle East on both sides?
I sure have. I have called upon Saddam to get out of Kuwait. But Saddam would not get out of Kuwait because of the American military force. He would get out of Kuwait, and we have advised the Arab and Muslim governments to take the initiative, to take the leadership, to pressure Saddam peacefully, persuade him to get out. And Saddam, as I know him, he would listen more to fellow Arabs, fellow Muslims, in their more peaceful persuasion than ever he would listen to this colonial bully from 8,000 miles away who has become the policeman of the world.
But they hadn't been very effective in trying to get him out of Kuwait.
My dear, complex things take longer time. Americans negotiated with the Russians 40 years. Russia was in a terrible colonial power, communist, all the nasty things. But what do? You negotiate 40 years. President Jimmy Carter negotiated with the Iranians 444 days. And in the Middle East, people may fight cats and dogs one day, and you see them the next day kissing and hugging. The style of solving problems there are other than the style in the West. But then what would Bush know about the psychology of modern nationalism? If he had not jumped in, I'm sure the people there, 6 months, a year, year and a half, would have gotten Saddam out of Kuwait peacefully.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, and thank your audiences.
Mohammed Mehdi is the Secretary General of the National Council on Islamic Affairs in New York and the President of the American-Arab Relations Committee. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.